Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Arne Schroeder, and I'm continuing my lay ministry on biophilia today. I'll have one more service after this, which is tentatively at least being moved from March 18th to March 11th, and that will feature actor Ted Sweats, who used to belong to this congregation, who's going to talk to us about the theater and literature and things that can bring to our lives. Today I'd like to start the service by lighting the candle to music, which subject of our service today, specifically good time music, and I'd like to read a quote from Joseph Addison. Music, the greatest good that mortals know, and all we have of heaven, and all of heaven we have below. Last week, for those of you who were here last week, we talked about creativity and what we make with our hands, and how we can create beauty and harmony. And that in creating, we are imitating nature to some extent. Several of the things that we might find beautiful in nature would be the symmetry that nature often features, the harmony of colors, and the beautiful aesthetic that nature creates. And in thinking about it afterwards, I realized that there are two types of artistic expression. One that I was talking about, where you're creating something beautiful, and the other, which is expressing something that isn't necessarily beautiful. It can be violent, it can be unsettling, it can be political, and that of course also is a very legitimate art form. We went to hear Ben Sindran speak a few weeks ago about jazz, because neither Dean nor I like jazz particularly, and we want to hear Ben Sindran's view of why we should. And he said that the jazz musician gets up in the morning and through his music tries to solve the question of how do I feel.
That's fine, that levels.
We're not recording.
Yes, we are.
The music might come out very dissonant, and yet that's a legitimate form of expression. So I decided that in music also there are kind of two different types. There's music that always makes us feel good or soothes us, and that music, in my very amateur opinion, often features the same things that I found in art as aesthetic, and that would be, in the case of music, harmony, rhythm, and beat. He said that one of the reasons that Dixieland music is so appealing is that it's on the beat. It's not playing off the beat like a lot of other jazz is, where it's more creative perhaps, but in Dixieland things follow a rhythm. And I could find that reflected back in nature also. One of the other quotes that I found was that there is no music in nature, neither melody nor harmony. Music is the creation of man. or woman. And the more I thought about that, the more I took exception to it, because when you think about it, there's a lot of natural rhythm. Your heartbeat, you know, that's the rhythm in your breathing that we deal with every day, and that's probably one reason that we find rhythmic music very settling, and that children do. A lullaby, you know, it has, if it was all over the place rhythmically, I don't think we would find it as soothing. But you probably really don't want to hear me talk about music today, because I don't know a whole lot about it. And I enjoy listening to it, and I'm curious to find out why those that enjoy playing it like to create it, what it means to them. And we have a number of very talented prairie people who are going to do that for us today. In fact, there are so many prairie people that are going to do it that I'm going to be the great timekeeper up here to make sure that we don't run over. We have a tradition at Prairie of starting late and finishing on time, theoretically. I did remember to bring my watch today. Is it 11:10 that we're supposed to finish this part? Or 11? 11?
Yes. Somewhere between there.
Oh, between there. Okay, good. This is a Unitarian group. We don't believe in absolutes, right? Mike Briggs was kind enough to start us off with some ragtime music. And now I thought, while the kids are still up here, we would sing a song that I hadn't thought about in a long time, but for those of you who've been listening to Garrison Keillor's new program, he had his audience in Brooklyn sing it, and he said that he realized that they were a conservative East Coast audience, and they might not really get off on this, but they really did, and I thought it made me feel so good to listen to them having a good time singing it. So those of you that have the Upham Woods songbooks, if you turn to page 11, some of you don't have it, I realize, but you'll catch on to the chorus pretty easily. We're going to sing There's a Tavern in the Town. And if you want to stand up to sing this, Mike's going to lead it for us.
I'm the same thing I do at Upham Woods every year. I'm just trying to figure out where you can. There's no music on this, you see. Wait a minute, that's not music. This is not music. Any more than what you see printed on a page is words. Words are what you speak, that's language. Music is what you put out through your mouth, too.
Every man will have no test, but friends must part.
got kind of interchanged. If you read those words, you'd think, this is one heck of a sad song. You'd hear it and you'd be like saying, yes, 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 and then you'd read it. What is this? What we'd like to do next is something very special, especially to me as a mother. Eileen and Anna Nettleton are going to play together and then say a few words about music, and I'd like the children to stay upstairs for this. As I said last week, it's not so often that we get to show show kids what kids and parents both do. They're going to play Allegro Battiato. And Anna is now a member of the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra. Is that right? And of course, Eileen's been very kind to be accompanying me every week.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure you can. I don't know. What do you like about music? I don't know. Well, what keeps you practicing, Anna?
Sometimes music allows us to express things that we can't express in other words.
Well, I can say something about accompanying and playing with other people. But I guess that's one of the things I enjoy. And it's sort of being not only in harmony with music, but trying to be in harmony with other people and getting a rhythm going. And I've always enjoyed doing that. I like accompanying, and it's nice to have some people.
Going to have the children go downstairs, and I'm sure they'll be sorry to leave because we're all having a good time, but they have some special things planned for them downstairs today too. So the kids would like to get up now, and we'll sing a song for them.
Go now in peace, go now in peace, may the Spirit of love surround you everywhere you may.
Prairie is very fortunate to have its own band, and as I mentioned in the introduction to my lay ministry, one of the things that first attracted me to Prairie was the Prairie Chicken Pluckers, and we're glad to have a group playing again. I know that over the years it depends on what kind of instruments you've got and what kind of talent the group has, and we had some special requests for the Prairie Band today. I think that maybe it was Annis at the beginning of my lay ministry who said, well, we have to have Ode to Joy, and the very accommodating Prairie Band has done that for us, worked that up. And then also someone said, well, how can we have a service called My Favorite Things without doing My Favorite Things? So they worked that one up also. Which one did you want to make first? We're going to start making Ode to Joy. Because I'm
going to pick up off the floor.
Why don't you just start by introducing yourself by name? Because I'm not sure that... But I know the names to introduce.
I'm Joanne Sackman.
Pat Miller.
Andrea Lawrence.
Mike Briggs.
Practice.
Maybe before we start, we should say we're very sorely missing Rose Burry.
Sorely. I shall return.
Thank you.
want to sing along on my favorite things. I don't have the words, but would the orchestra and the band mind if anybody knows the raindrops on Worcester and all that sort of stuff?
Plays piano a little bit and sings, and
every night after dinner, while the kids were doing the dishes, she'd sit down on the piano and play, and we'd sing along and kind of make work wise. And I think it was when I was in junior high school, I decided I wanted to be a music teacher. My bachelor's degree is in instrumental and vocal music. And I, like Pat, kind of just let it slide for probably 10 or 12 years. I didn't play at all. And when we moved to Michigan, Carol convinced me that they were starting a brand new community band, convinced me that I should pick something up and go back and play a little bit. And I'm really happy I did, because it was something that was really missing from my life. So, and I'm not sure how to describe what music does. I think Pat did a much better job than I ever could, but it sure fills a part that can't be filled in any other way. So I'm real glad, and it's fun not to be playing with this prayer band. Pick up and just play a little bit. So.
The music I ever made that I remember, apart from the kiddie thing, the nursery thing, was a show me in the church choir at about the age of 8. An awful lot of British male musicians, where I was raised in England, seemed to have gotten their start this way by being forced to sing in this unnatural voice, this boy soprano. twice every Sunday, at least. So they put me to the piano. Too late, and I regret that. Started at the age of 10. Should have started about 5 years earlier, I think. I got piano hands. Big show children. I missed that. But I think the one regret is that I wish I'd been able to do it seriously. I've enjoyed it. Still enjoy it. Played a variety of things, but never anything enough, I don't think. Dixieland jazz in college, piano off and on, party piano, picked up guitar, lived down and played a little banjo. The real musical love of my life, though, I bet you it's going like this, there's none of these, and I didn't bring it this morning because it's really not a church instrument. It's a little squeeze box, the button accordion. And it illustrates, for me, what a lot of what music is all about, that you're fighting against it. I don't know how many of you have tried to write poetry. And you can churn out something in sort of free form fairly easily. You just let everything drop out of your mouth and out of the page. You start working with rules and structures, and it becomes a little more difficult and a little more of a challenge. Take a song. You know, you've got 14 lines, and it has to rhyme in a certain speed. And to come up with something that has any artistic merit within that form is a real challenge. Any kind of music is like that, I think. That it's not just the sort of 60s, you know, three chords and a guitar and, you know, anybody does their thing. That's nice, but to me that's not music. And music is, on whatever level it is, trying to be more of what you've got, to rise above it. That doesn't make sense. I get inarticulate.
In the late 60s, I lived in New York, and like Andrea and Pat, I have given up music for a long time for work. And but I had some friends in New York who influenced me a lot. And so instead of talking a long time this morning, I just brought a couple of pictures and passed around. And the one thing that I learned from them during the time I was out there was that music speaks louder than words, because it's the only thing that the whole world will listen to. And that's sort of been a theme that they've used in their music for years, and that I've tried to adopt in doing things with children with music. I brought the pictures of my two sons and some of the people that influenced me back in the 60s.
Hi,
Pat.
Hi.
Thank you all for sharing that. We're going to continue in the sharing mode since Rosemary Lester is unable to play today. She's going to...
Yeah.
Sure. this is Prairie.
Music is something that you not only hear and make output on, but you feel it in your body. And when you play with someone else, they're feeling the same feeling. And it's just a wonderful way of sharing.
And I think that leads into dance, which is something that
that
Julie Bonser mentioned, that we really should do some prairie dance, because that's something that is again something that brings people a lot of joy, that physical moving together and moving to the rhythm. And I think that that's, as you say, a real important part of music. Rosemary, do you want to come up front here? Do you want to share today?
Well, I am reduced to words today, and I become inarticulate when I have to talk personally about music, because it is that important to me. It's that important to me, and so instead of trying to say something out of my own heart, which I scribbled it down and it became very gushy. So I have to give a lecture on Hermann Hesse's Steppenwolf tomorrow. And many of you will know Hesse Steppenwolf. He was certainly a cult author almost in the 60s. And I found there a marvelous dialogue between the music-loving intellectual, Harry Huller, the Steppenwolf, a very frustrated person, and Pablo, the jazz musician. And I'm glad you mentioned jazz earlier. And I decided to throw out my notes and just read you this little dialogue. I think one can discuss endlessly about it. Huller, the frustrated intellectual, speaks here, and he's wanted to attempt to talk. Several times I've attempted to talk about music with you, he says to Pablo. It would have interested me to know your thoughts and opinions, whether they contradicted mine or not, but you've disdained to make me even the barest reply. The good-looking, dark-eyed, dark-haired Pablo says, "Well, you see, in my opinion, there's no point at all in talking about music. I never talk about music. What reply, then, was I to make to your very able and just remarks? You were perfectly right in all you said, but you see, I am a musician, not a professor. And I don't believe that as regards music, there is the least point in being right. Music does not depend on being right, on having good taste and education and all that." "Indeed," says Harry. "Then what does it depend on?" "On making music, Herr Huller. On making music as well and as much as possible and with all the intensity of which one is capable. That is the point, monsieur. Though I carried the complete works of Bach and Haydn in my head and could say the cleverest things about them, not a soul would be the better for it. But when I take hold of my mouthpiece and play a lively shimmy, whether the shimmy be good or bad, it will give people pleasure. It gets into their legs and into their blood." "Very good, Herr Pablo," says the professor. "But there's not only sensual music, there is spiritual also. Besides the music that is actually played at the moment, there is the immortal music that lives on even when it is not actually being played. It can happen to a man to lie alone in bed and to call to mind a melody from the Magic Flute or the Matthew Passion. And then there's music without anybody blowing into a flute or passing a bow across a fiddle." "Certainly, Herr Huller," says Pablo. "Yearning and Valencia," those were the hit songs of the day, "are recalled every night by many a lonely dreamer. Even the poorest typist in her office has the latest one step in her head and taps her keys in time to it. I don't grudge all those lonely persons their mute music, whether it's Yearning or the Magic Flute or Valencia. But where do they get their lonely and mute music from? They get it from us, the musicians. It must first have been played and heard. It must have got into the blood before anyone at home in his room can think of it and dream of it." "Granted," I said coolly. "All the same, it won't do to put Mozart and the latest Foxtrot on the same level. And it is not one and the same thing whether you play people divine and eternal music or cheap stuff of the day that is forgotten tomorrow. Pablo observed from my tone I was getting excited, and he at once put on his most amiable expression. "Ah, my dear sir, you may be perfectly right with your levels. I have nothing to say to your putting Mozart and Haydn and Valencia on what levels you please. It's all one to me. It's not for me to decide about levels. Mozart, perhaps, will still be played in 100 years, and Valencia in 2 will be played no more. we can well leave that, I think, in God's hands. God is good and has the span of all our days in his hands, and that of every waltz and foxtrot too. We musicians, however, we must play our parts according to our duties and our gifts. We have to play what is actually in demand, and we have to play it as well and as beautifully and as expressively as ever we can. With a sigh, I gave it up. There was no getting past the fellow. But the argument could go on and on.
Thank you very much. Bill Robbins and Michelle Honoré are now going to do some music and some thoughts. Bill told me that he's a tuba player without a tuba. Luckily, he's not just going to sing the parts. He's going to... they brought a keyboard today that they have set up over here. And it's a keyboard that I understand is temporarily in their possession, and it's like something that we'd all like to have a chance to own for a few months and play around with.
This is an original composition. What do you want to say about it, Michelle?
A couple things. First of all, I think one of the things I personally really enjoy about music is that it takes me places in my imagination. Whenever I play it or even listen to it, it seems as though I'm all someplace else. And I love that about it. And this song has kind of an African influence on it. And so whenever I listen to it, I go to Africa. And I think some of my favorite musicians tend to incorporate the African rhythm into the music they play, and it's certainly had an influence on me, so you probably recognize that.
We were going to try to play a joke on you all and both sit down at it and start playing and then walk away as it was playing. But we decided that'd be a little too silly. So just to explain it, it's something that we, with an instrument like this, you kind of record it as you play it. So we're just going to play it back. We recorded it Friday and Saturday.
Thank you.
crazy sometimes because it's never exactly right. It's the kind of thing that you can constantly change and add to and take away from and revise so that, like Mike said, you want to aspire to higher heights with it and the challenges you have.
I like it a lot. I think if I was here with a tuba, I'd feel more like a musician. Because that's something that I'd spend hours and hours every day practicing on, like the people that came before us, I think, to a large degree. And that's real musicianship with a real instrument. This, to me, is a toy. And that's great. It's not any lesser on any more, but it's something that you don't have to be much of a musician, and you can take your time with it. And if a part doesn't come out right, you can go back and edit it like a word processor. It's really how it works. So it's a real fun technology. And like Michelle said, when you go to different places, when you're really in the middle of something musically, you're so concentrated on that one thing. It's a new reality you're experiencing. That's what I really like about it. And it's fun to have something to share between us that we can force ourselves to collaborate on. Sometimes it seems like it'd be easier for us to just, I'll do one song for Perry, you do another song, we'll both play them. But to really force ourselves to put something together with input from each of us, that whole creative process, I think is a wonderful experience you really grow through.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Did you have a drum in the room?
It all came out of this thing. There's 100 different instruments in here that you can play.
And you pound the rhythm.
On the keys.
You set up your drum, and then you play the drum part. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I want to say afterwards, anybody that would like to have fun with this toy, come on up and we'll play with it. It's just a blast to mess around with it.
Watch out.
Oh, no.
Watch out. Yeah. The cat's
You know, you were talking about taking piano as a boy, and I kind of miss the fact that, you know, we're really encouraging our kids to take piano because it's the kind of thing that no child is going to wake up one day and say, gee, I feel like taking piano lessons. But so many people that took piano lessons as kids, even if they said they hated it, they were glad later that they did. I started on Glockenspiel in eighth grade and somehow didn't stay with me. I could say I'm a Glockenspiel player without a Glockenspiel, just like Bill's without a tuba, but that wouldn't be true. I don't think I could play one if there was one in the room. I was kind of hoping that Mike might have something else to play for us. Do you have another ragtime piece that you didn't get time to play beforehand?
I thought of it. What I played coming in was supposedly the, it's called Mississippi Rag. Book is called The Best of Ragtime Favorites and How to Play Them. It doesn't tell you how to play them. Mississippi Rag was published in 1897, and supposedly the first rag written down
by whom?
A fellow called W.H. Krell. And this, it's raggy, you're hitting it off the beat. The other thing that is another form of music that sounds better, and I think people try to write it down, but it doesn't work, is the blues. Maybe I don't have any qualifications for playing the blues. You know, I'm middle-aged, I'm white. Clearly, I'm Anglo. I think
it's... Can't you feel blue?
I think you can. This won't bring you all down too far. Learn to play the blues in flat keys, which is not the way a guitarist typically plays. And the guitarist will work in... That's more or less... This piano's out of tune. Guitarist will work in the key of E, which works real well on a guitar playing the blues.
I was done with a bunch of horn players in college. And a horn player plays C, B, G, thinks they're playing C. Pim's got played in B flat.
Are there any other people that didn't get to speak yet that would like to?
Well, I thought there is one other Prairie musical group that we haven't honored yet, and people might have forgotten about, but we have the Prairie Bad Singers.
Prairie Bad?
I'm never qualified to join the group. But, you know, I think it points out another aspect of it, and that is that you can enjoy the people enjoying the making.
The Prairie Band Singers?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I missed that one. I would have thought that. You haven't missed the
director. It's a
I'm sorry I missed that, because when I was in fifth grade, our music teacher had us sing a song, and she went around and she pointed to us, and I was the only girl who got to stand up. And I was so proud of myself. And she said, "You're the ones who are tone deaf. Get out of here." So the Prairie Band Singers, I mean, I could have been the leader.
Were they here in the audience? Were they the Prairie
Band? Yes, I was the first woman.
Have you ever been asked to perform, or is this sort of thing?
Every year, Dr. Woods.
Oh, so you should miss Dr. Woods.
Usually in the bar.
The talent show, I believe.
Yeah. Some other comments about music?
I was thinking, listening to Mike, that I was reminded that music is another mood-altering substance and an enhancer. And I think that's one of the qualities I like about music, is when I want to feel something, or I know I want to feel something, there's usually some piece of music that can help me feel it more or trigger things. And it really affects something other than the verbal capacity, and I really appreciate that, because sometimes I think I live too much with words and not enough with feelings, enjoy that quality of music. And I want to... One time, I was missing a musical instrument in my life. I didn't have any. And we talked about when I was a kid, I took piano lessons and I wasn't very good at it. And I always compared myself with my mother, who was an accomplished pianist. But she let me take music lessons all the way through high school because I enjoyed it. And I was mentioning this in one of my women's groups, and Rebecca Clark, bless her heart, loaned me her piano so I could have a piano to play. And as a friend, the gifts of music that we give to each other are so tremendous, I think. And I appreciate the music I hear here and the instruments that we loan each other.
Really?
I think there's a prairie historian around who remembers the prairie silo singers.
No.
Now, they won the World International Dairy Exposition.
Second place.
In the World International Dairy Exposition silo singing contest in 1970.
Probably
about 71. Yeah. That's a form of singing, as I remember, where you get inside a silo and you sing things like "Precious Jesus," you know, like that, and the picture shit drops on your head. And didn't they, in the World International Dairy Exposition, didn't they erect a special silo for you all to crawl inside? And you did it, and you know.
It's like singing in the shower, but
it's like you're not singing to the end,
right?
There's another one too, and not being a musician, I have to do all of this vicariously. But there's a certain lightness, and a lot of times the titles of groups have come out. And George Cole and George Muth, this wonderful Florida sunshine that they seek every winter, can't be here. But George one day stood up, and I believe that there was only one performance perhaps of a group called the Martin Luther Trio. John is here. I don't know if anybody knows the members of those groups are here. Everybody is here.
Right.
What about
Well, we had actually hoped that Joe Lawrence and Barbara James were going to surprise us by being here today, but instead they decided to surprise us by not being here today. I was surprised.
Well, Rosemary was reading that very fascinating account from the
1970s.
There was a passage in there about different levels of culture. How put something of high level of culture and say that's worthy of being esteemed and absolutely considered lower levels. And of course, that's so nonsensical, and I think that was very well done. I want to make mention of the fact that this is Black History Month, and I was terribly impressed by the various contributions we've had and how frequently Black contributions to music have been emphasized today. Blues, ragtime, jazz, and of course, Africa. And I think that's testimony to the degree to which we have been enriched by the Black experience.
And I think it ties in a little bit with what we were saying last week about the Hmong using their needlework as a means of expression because they did not have a lot of written history. They didn't have a written language. And I think that Black culture has given us a lot in music. It seems to be a means of expression for what they want to express, and also that is something that's an active part of their culture. I think that another thing that ties into that is music as a political expression. When you think of getting a crowd of thousands of people singing "We Shall Overcome," it's much more of a statement than everybody yelling or everybody trying to agree on a spoken word statement. And we touched a little bit before on the international nature of music, that you can sing around with people from all over. I mean, even that silly "I Want to Buy the World a Coke" song, you know, it still kind of gives me goosebumps to see all those people doing it. Yeah.
Can I guess, Nick?
Sure. Welcome back.
I'm a hybrid.
and I grew up in a black culture, and my immediate grandparents are darker than I am. Okay, so a lot of times people miss me as being a black person, but I teach at an inner city school in Milwaukee, and I'm struggling with how to reach the kids and how to save them. We have a generation of people lost. I don't know if we're ever reclaim them. But I think if we're going to do anything and shift schools and change them, we have millions of plans, and you know, everybody's head's got some idea how to better schools. But I think we have to go back to something very human and very humane, like music. The kids respond, as we all do, to the fine arts, if you want to call them that, the music, all the names we have for music and art, theater, what have you. And there is an internal discipline, and there's a passage of history that comes. And every time I hear the blues, I have a dichotomy, maybe a feeling, because you know you feel like that's my music. You don't understand how to play it. My music. That's terrible. You know, this is an art form. You know how proud I should be that this gentleman is sitting here playing.
Wanting to play.
You know, and so you know, with this American experience we've all had, we've taught all these terrible things about the high level of this and the low level of that. You know, and I'm trying to get that across to the kids. And every time I bring something to either I prefer live, because the kids are so used to electronic that they don't understand the discipline and the beauty and wonder of not overcoming it, but making it an instrument part of you, because you can play it. You know, that's always magic to me. So I can take this thing and play it. You know? And I'll do the same thing. I must learn before I die how to read music, right? But anyway, whatever I'm trying to say. Even if I have something on from Channel 10 or PBS, they've been doing a lot of neat programs about black heritage and black culture. And the kids don't go to Channel 10, so I always make sure that I try to expose them. And there was one that they did, and maybe you're interested in this, on Wild Women Come Get the Blues. It was great. I didn't know a lot of that myself, and I consider myself knowing a little bit about black history. And it was great, and it did such a neat job of explaining the movement of the rhythms and so forth in and out of church music and secular music and bringing together, and some people did not really, they thought this was devil music unless it was in the church, and it was just great. So if any of you want to, a little more background on this, dig that out of some video library somewhere.
Wild Women Don't Get the Blues.
It shows the development, the history, whatever you want to say, of the black blues singers from Parchis, the end of the last century up to about 1929 or 30, and they were really the first pop singers, in a sense, that everybody really thought of as being number one hits on the hit parade or whatever. I had no idea that was there until I stumbled onto this a couple years ago. But it's really opened my mind up to a lot of things.
Well, I'd like to follow up on a couple of things. Yesterday I went to this African-American children's festival, and the St. Paul choir, a children's choir, the master was singing. And I was just sitting there crying during listening to their music. It was all very religious, which my daughter was having a hard time with because she was raised a Unitarian. I just felt like hitting her and saying, "Get beyond it, Robin." So here she was irritated because they were saying God and Jesus, and I was crying. Because I felt like, how did this racism ever come to be? I just was so moved by this music. And the other thing is, I'd really like to put a positive word in for tone deaf people. I was labeled tone deaf, and that was bad. You were a bad person. But somehow I managed to get beyond that and feel like I have a tremendous love of music. And when I put my walkman earpieces on,
and we first started singing together when my family, who went caroling, my brother and sister and I all went caroling every year together. And we took her with us because she was French. And it's true she couldn't sing on key very well. But with time and with enjoyment of sharing this, she finally went to the Glee Club school and was given one of the total parts of the play.
You mean there's hope?
Yeah, I think back here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My son Alan, who is just graduated from school in music, had one class called ear training, and he found it extremely useful. He thinks other people might also.
I have a really that he's been taking a big step in his backdoor now. I'm listening to this, and I'm hearing everyone say how wonderful music experiences have been throughout their life. But, and there's a subtle sort of apology that some of us have, and I think in sort of our society is involved in apologizing often for our lack of musicality while expressing our inherent needs to be involved in it. And I would just like to reiterate that inside of each one of us is a song that we need to feel free to express, free to inner voice. And inside of each one of us is a rhythm. And everyone has an inherent right. And whether you chant Allah Akbar or sing Hallelujah, it doesn't matter. Music is an expression of the most fundamental aspect of what humanness is. And it's through that we are able to ascend to our highest levels of being, I think. And I don't know what kind of song you have for ending.
Suggestion.
And I don't want to jump in and be intrusive, but I think, you know, the basic, you can talk about levels of accomplishment, but underneath it all, there are some subtle rhythms and harmonic truths that exist, and whether you talk about the harmony of the spheres and try to put it into cosmological terms or Jungian terms, or talk about ear training and go along with Piston's harmony for the 20th century and through, you know, the history. It doesn't matter. There's pitches and there's a rhythm inside of everybody, and it can come together to create a great joy. And that's what I would just like to reiterate, that you can find the joy in music, because there's a sign inside of you and there's a rhythm in your heartbeat. And music belongs to everyone regardless of the capability that I just told you to have.
I'd love to end it. Would that be okay, Betty, if I skipped you? That's such a good note to end on. Do you understand something?
I was just going to say that when I came home from kindergarten, the songs my mother said she didn't know what the tune was. And then 3 years later, my sister came home with the same songs, and that's when she found out what the tune was. But when I was in fifth grade, I insisted on taking violin lessons, and my mother said, "You can't take violin lessons. You can't carry a tune." But I took violin lessons, and I played in the university orchestra and the Nassau Symphony.
Let's tell you what we're going to sing. Should we stand up and sing it?
Sure, yeah.
Stand up.
It sounds much better.
He's not going to tell us. Bring the fork here.
Grace appear.
dangers, toils, and snares.
Thank you. I am always amazed at the talent that this parish has. It never ceases to amaze me. And thanks very much for the program. It was terrific. There are, of course, all types of creative endeavors and creative things that can be done. And so, in order to get the first announcement in, and really the first joy, too, is the thing that's taking place at 2:30 this afternoon with Mary Mullen. Mary, would you like to say something about it?
Oh, sure. Well, about a year ago, I applied for a grant from Dane County Cultural Affairs to get a book together on the Dunn's Marsh neighborhood history. And if everything works out all right, at about 2:30 or maybe even 2:45, these books are going to arrive right here. I have a copy of the cover here, so I've been down there to the printer, and they stayed up all night long. They stayed up mostly all night long for the last 3 or 4 nights. But anyway, at 2:30 this afternoon, there's a celebration of the book, and there will be some readings from the book and a movie about what used to be the University Electric Research Farm, and book signing and all that sort of thing, and you're all welcome to come. 2:30 this afternoon here. And we'll have lots of air photos and all sorts of other things on display. So please come if you're interested.
Any joy that other people have they like to share?
Yeah, I have a joy. Some of you may remember when my daughter Kate first moved here. She was 7 years old, and she couldn't speak. Do you remember? She could, I can't even do what she used to do, but she couldn't speak. And she had speech help and everything. And in the middle of all this, she came to us one day and said, "I want to take up the viola." And she spoke with that viola, and then she learned to speak. She's 25 years old this morning. That's my joy.
Dean.
Well, I had a really, I crossed a big river this week, and I think I was successfully to the other side. I had my qualifiers for my Master of Fine Arts degree, and 3 of the 4 professors have now shown up and said, okay. So.
Anybody else? Anything that anybody would like to share this morning of any nature?
Introduction?
Well, this will come down from the words you heard from this corner over here, but I just wanted to add a little bit to what Betty said, that they're really musical ability, like other abilities, like ability to read or athletic ability, something that's partly what you're born with and partly what you do with it, and you can go a long way starting from very little. From my own experience, I've pushed far beyond what I started with, and I think anyone can. So you can skip and say you're tone deaf. That means you weren't born with very much, but you can do a lot with what you were born with. A lot of work.
I'd also like to add, and maybe it's tooting my own horn a little bit, but. That it's real easy to underestimate the influence, or I shouldn't say underestimate, it's obvious the influence electronics has on children these days. And I don't think we should really downplay the positive side of something like this around kids, because my children have just taken to it so much and really enjoy creating with it. And I don't want to discourage that at all in them. I think it's a great way to bring out some creativity in them. And, you know, even though it's what everyone likes to do now, it's a real creative process for them.
Is there a Beth Thompson in the room?
Yes.
Well, you see me in about 5 minutes, there's going to be a phone call for you.
Announcement? Go ahead. Julie?
This is a social action committee announcement. We were approached as a committee by a group called Pastors for Peace, which is sending some aid to El Salvador, and in the process of meeting with this person, we thought, well, you know, we've already got our own group, Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, which has already got projects going in El Salvador, so in lieu of sending money to Pastors for Peace, we're going to take up a collection for UUSC, and I'll just explain real briefly.
There will be no other collection this morning, just this collection.
I called them last week just to find out what's going on, ongoing stuff. There's not a specific push right now. Unitarian Service, UUSC does what you might consider mission work without the religion attached. They do self-help projects. Let's see, they're working on community-based health programs. They're making up medical kits to give to workers in the countryside. They're working to rebuild homes, and most particularly, they're working through a women's group down there to rebuild the homes of female-headed households that have been damaged during the war. And they're also doing a lot of work with the repopulation. A lot of people were displaced with the fighting in the River in December, and now they're coming back. And the Pastors for Peace group is sending their aid specifically to that area to be populated, so they're pretty back. And also, there's a letter writing table out there with materials that we can do afterwards.
Just a brief announcement. Our series, Black History, A Global Perspective, is still going on for 3 more Thursdays. I put some more programs outside on the table, so if you're interested, pick them up. And if you want to hear some feedback, Warren has been a faithful attender. You can tell me whether it's good or not. Introduction.
Yeah. Were there any other announcements? Anne?
I have a couple. One, not exactly our read, but there's a national contest going on. It's sponsored by Fellowship of Reconciliation and Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors and the War Resisters League, among many others. And it's a contest for 15 to 23-year-olds to interview someone who has resisted working for the military-industrial complex, who has refused to pay war taxes, or who has refused to serve in the armed forces for reasons of conscience. And the contest, which has $500 and several $100 prizes, is to have an interview an individual who has done one of these acts, and then create either music or literature or poetry or an essay, something to explain about that. So if this wonderful space is claimed by someone else, I'm going to put this up here. And if anyone wants any more information, I'll be glad to pass it along. And then secondly, for the RE program, the children chose names for their secret friends today. I appreciate everyone who signed up. We have more adults than kids, so it's like not everyone's going to be able to partake in it, even though you wanted to. The children chose their names today, and you'll be starting to get messages from them tomorrow. I have a letter that kind of outlines what you're expected to do as part of this, and I'll be giving that to those of you whose names are chosen today. Different children might be here next week, and so some of you still have a chance.
Before we have any further announcements, make sure we get introductions in, and Frederica did point it out. Do we have people here who are guests who would like to be introduced or introduce themselves? Yes?
Jack, I'd like to introduce our friends from Milwaukee, Sharon Williams, who spoke very eloquently already today, and Pat Wilkins.
Michelle?
I'd like to introduce my kids. This is Joanna and Daniel.
Any other introductions? Final announcement?
Well, I'd like to announce that there are 10 Marie Donuts this morning, but I was sitting here thinking, I can't believe next Sunday is March 4th already, and next Sunday is the January Young Adult Service here. It's going to be a really interesting service, and I hope all of you can come. It's called
called the Transylvania Music. It too will have a lot of music in it. We have about, I'd say, 15 to 20 young adults who are going to be participating. And it's a celebration of our of religious freedom and a celebration of just our diversity. It's going to be fun.
That's next Sunday, right?
Next Sunday.
Dick, I know you have an announcement.
Yep. Every 2 weeks I have an announcement. Today's the deadline for Prairie Fire. And all of you who have notices, articles, letters, announcements, begs, borrows, or what have you, things to sell or want to buy that you'd like to have in the Prairie Fire, please give them to me right after the service, if possible, by 5 o'clock this evening without fail. What I don't have won't go in. And I'm very busy at work right now, so I do not have any time to work on it much past this evening. Thank you all.
Anna mentioned that she's a member of the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra. Some of you have been contacted already by her for a fundraiser. The Youth Symphony does a day-long play-a-thon in East Town, and they break the orchestra up into smaller groups and each plays for an hour, seeing how many they can play without destroying the tempo. They play approximately 15 songs per hour. If you're interested in contributing to Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra, by the way, at home, Anna didn't really answer. I ended up doing a lot of dishes at home. So if you're going to keep me in dishes, you might consider the Wisconsin Youth Symphony
Behind
Orchestra.
Every strong woman is a man, right?
A dollar for each contribution represents about $15 investment in Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra. She didn't bring forms today, so I made one. I'll have it, and she'll show up in a while.
Mary?
Just going to say, don't put the chairs away because I'm just going to rearrange them this afternoon.
Fine. Thanks for all coming, and maybe we'll see quite a few of that too soon. Thank you.